The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
But first, the Abuse Support Service 1 in 4 has been inundated with calls from men who experience child sexual assault and are disclosing their abuse, often for the first time. Now, this increase in demand follows recent revelations of historical sex abuse in some private schools. I'm joined on the line by Maeve Lewis, CEO of 1 in 4. They launched their annual report this morning. Maeve, good morning.
Good morning, Pat.
Now, first of all, this spike in calls, are many of them people from whom you've never heard before?
Yes. I mean, Pat, normally we would have maybe four or five first contacts a day. In the past 3 weeks, we've been having perhaps up to 20 calls a day from people disclosing for the first time. Many of them have been abused in spirit in schools, but we've also had calls from men, mainly middle-aged men, who were also abused in schools run by the Dominicans, the Jesuits, the Vincentians, and so on. Mm. So it has emerged that this is a huge problem. And what is so sad is that so many of these men have never disclosed before, have never got support, and the impact the abuse has had on their lives, on their marriages, on their professional careers has been devastating. So, and many of them now in their 50s and 60s, looking back on a life that has certainly not been, they've not been able to live to their full potential.
And for those who maybe have talked about the abuse they suffered before, does media coverage at times like this trigger them again?
Yes, it certainly does. And I mean, we've also had calls from people abused in other situations. I mean, almost half our clients at any given time will have been abused in their own families, and then people abused in their communities, in, you know, sport clubs and so on. So this triggers everybody. But in a, I think in a very positive way, because many people who've been sexually abused believe they're the only person this ever happened to. And they're often paralysed, really, by a sense of personal shame, believing it was something about them that caused the abuse. So when survivors hear other people talking about their experiences, it sometimes really encourages them to reach out and get the help they need.
Now, what help can you in 1 in 4 offer?
Well, we have a variety of programmes, Pat. Obviously, we have a psychotherapy programme where we work with people in individual and group therapy. And we also have an advocacy programme where we support people to engage with the criminal justice system, child protection services, and so on. For example, last year we supported 53 people through criminal trials. Many people don't realise, but we also have a prevention programme where we work with men and indeed a small number of women who have caused sexual harm to children.
And how does that work? Because I read in your reporting that 65 men who caused sexual harm to children attended your prevention program. And it says that, you know, a lot of them actually committed offences online.
That's true. And I think this is a growing problem. The entire landscape, I think, of sex offending has changed. And Pat, sometimes people often minimise online offending. They talk about child porn as if it's somehow, you know, the same as adult porn. Whereas, in fact, each image, each video clip is a crime scene. There is a real child who's been sexually abused. And international research would show that when people begin to look at online images of child sexual exploitation, often at a very young age, like some of our offenders have begun looking at that material when they're, you know, very young, at puberty, 11, 12, 13, and then will go on perhaps to contact offences. So we had an expert over to speak at a conference from Interpol recently, and Pat, it was one of the most frightening presentations I have ever heard about the explosion of online sexual abuse images of children, and really how helpless police forces across the world are to deal with this deluge. It has become a complete industry, huge money.
What is your view in 1 in 4 of what is happening to those who, for example, start looking at child pornography at the age of 13 or 14 at the time of puberty? Is what they're doing somehow innate, or is it a perversion that this causes, the observing of this material causes a perversion of their sexuality?
You know, the jury is out on that one, Pat, but certainly with a lot of the men, the young men we meet, they wouldn't have had any interest in sexually in children, and they become sexualized through these images, and it normalizes, you know, sexual assaults of children for these young men. So, I mean, that is a desperately sad situation.
Now, you do a huge amount of work every year. I mean, your advocacy case manager supported 492 survivors to engage with the criminal and civil justice systems. And then you mentioned also 53 clients were helped through the criminal courts with their situations. It seems like a huge amount of work. Are you resourced sufficiently?
No, and no service working with sexual violence is resourced sufficiently, Pat. I mean, last year the demand was so great for our service, we actually had to close our waiting list for 4 months. Now, of the people we met last year, a quarter of them, 25%, had made an attempt to take their own lives at some point throughout their lives. So having a long waiting list is really concerning. And when you can't even put somebody on a waiting list, we're always wondering and worried, well, what has become of that person? And last year, there was a very positive move in that we got some funding from TUSLA to create a new position, a waiting list case manager, who can provide crisis counselling and support to people on the waiting list while they're waiting for therapy. So that allays some of the concern. But what about all the people who can't even get on a waiting list? And we can't refer elsewhere because all the rape crisis centres, National Counselling Service, all have long, long waiting lists.
And how are you funded? I mean, you mentioned some funding from TUSLA for one position, but generally, how do you fund one in four?
Well, last year it cost about $1.2 million to run the service, and 75% of that funding came from the HSC, TUSLA and the Department of Justice, and we're very grateful for that. But, for example, in relation to the HSC, our funding has been the same since 2014, and, you know, we're nearly 10 years on from there. And while, you know, as I say, we're very grateful for the funding we receive, it simply is inadequate to meet the demand. Mm-hmm. The rest of our funding we make through fundraising events, donations from the public. Yeah. So, you know, that is another part of the work we do.
Yeah. And finally, maybe I should ask you, what is different about the way you operate to the way the statutory services might operate? People approaching you, do people feel more comfortable approaching an organisation like yours rather than, if you like, the state in some guise?
I'm not sure that's true. For example, there is a huge demand for the National Counselling Service, which is a statutory service. But I think people have a great deal of confidence in One in Four, because we are seen to be independent. We are seen to name all the difficulties that are there for people. And there is a trust that we know what we're doing, that we provide very expert care when people contact us.
Maeve Lewis, CEO of One in Four, thank you very much for joining us.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.